You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kevin Bailey. I represent the appellant, Mr. Derek Bernard Powell. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Right.
The trial court and the Court of Appeals erred in determining that the evidence was sufficient to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the appellant distributed an imitation Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 controlled substance because quetiapine is in fact a controlled substance, and whether that drug is subject to abuse has yet to be established. I direct the court's attention at some point to page 53 of the appendix. At the trial court level, the evidence established truly one fact about the drug, quetiapine. Quetiapine is a Schedule 6.
Pronounce that one more time. What is it?
Your Honor, I'll pronounce it quetiapine.
Quetiapine. Okay, we'll accept your pronunciation.
And I may be wrong on that.
It's as good as anything. Go ahead.
The evidence showed one thing about quetiapine, that is a Schedule 6 drug. The forensic scientist in the case stated multiple times that it was outside of her realm of expertise. The court and the Commonwealth both stated it's outside of her realm of expertise. She suggested that it might be an antibiotic, but that was a mere suggestion. When questioned further, she said she was unsure. It's outside of her realm of expertise.
Well, it's not an antibiotic. It's an antipsychotic.
That is my understanding, Your Honor. I looked it up this morning, and I believe it's used to treat schizophrenia. And so I do agree with the court. And I believe that, again, that was the only evidence established. Whether it was subject to abuse, no evidence was presented at the trial court level. And it was not even argued by counsel for the Commonwealth at the trial court level that it was subject to abuse. And our contention is that, yes, it's a controlled substance, but whether it's subject to abuse...
Why are controlled substances controlled?
Coming in, Your Honor?
Why are controlled substances controlled?
Your Honor, for various reasons.
Because they're subject to abuse?
I believe that will be the case. I believe that Schedule 6 controlled substances can be abused.
Including antipsychotic medication. Would that be correct?
Coming in?
Including antipsychotic medications?
Sounds like a very friendly question.
It is a good question. It's a friendly question, and I believe that it can be abused. And my research led to...
In fact, if someone is psychotic, they would be even more likely to abuse it, would they not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So therefore, isn't it subject to abuse?
I believe that it is, Your Honor. My research led me to believe it was abused. I asked questions concerning the drug. No one knew the answers. I asked whether you could, what was a cue ball and what was a mac ball. Well, my research led me to believe that quetiapine was mixed with certain drugs to form these cue balls and mac balls. And it is abused. It's abused in prison. But no evidence was presented by the Commonwealth that on the subject at all.
Now, counsel, let me give you a hypothetical. If this transaction, instead of crack cocaine being exchanged, if it was dried cornstarch that was exchanged, that appeared to be crack cocaine, that would be a felony, would it not?
It would be a class 6 felony, and it's distribution of imitation controlled substance.
In this instance, instead of it being dried cornstarch, it was an antipsychotic.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're arguing that would be a misdemeanor.
I am, Your Honor, and that's strange.
Is that not an absurd interpretation of what the General Assembly intended through this statute? That cornstarch is a felony, that an antipsychotic is a misdemeanor?
It is absurd.
Okay.
And the court pointed out that it was absurd, and I've always felt it's absurd, but I believe that is the case. And what's interesting...
Are you arguing
for an absurd interpretation of a Virginia statute?
No, Your Honor, I'm not arguing... I'm saying that the result seems absurd.
Indeed.
But I'm arguing for the right result. I believe that what he did was a Class 1 misdemeanor. What I find interesting is...
We have a doctrine that we will not interpret a statute in order to achieve an absurd result, because we don't believe the General Assembly would wish to have such a result.
But isn't your answer the fact that there's no ambiguity? The legislature is the entity that decided that it had to be a drug subject to... not subject to abuse in order for it to be a felon. I mean, isn't that the answer to the question? It's the plain language of the statute.
Yes, sir. I agree. I believe that was the holding in Rhodes in 1991, that the plain meaning of the statute, subject to abuse, means subject to abuse.
Well, let's go to the statutes, all right? Code section 18.2.247 says, whenever the terms controlled substances and the terms schedules 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are used in Title 18.2. Such terms refer to those terms as they are used or defined in the Drug Control Act, which is in Title 54. So in order to determine whether or not the legislature has decided whether this is subject to abuse, we have to go to the Drug Control Act. If you go to the Drug Control Act, what you find is Schedules 1 through 5 have a greater and then a lesser potential for abuse, all the way up to 5. But in the Drug Control Act, there is no mention of any potential for abuse under anything scheduled in Schedule 6. Now, while I happen to believe that this drug is subject to abuse, I don't get to make that call. So if you look at the Drug Control Act, there is no inclusion of this drug in Schedule 6. Schedule 1 through 5, however, are all identified as being subject to abuse. So what does that mean?
Well, Your Honor, first I'd like to address the first point that you made about how under 18.2.247, the definition section there references the Drug Control Act to determine what a Schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 drug is. It does do that. And there are other definitions listed under 18.2.247. But the phrase subject to abuse is not listed under 18.2.247. And the first point I make in my brief and the point I make to you today is we do not jump to a statutory construction where we're defining one part of the code by another part of the code.
Well, you do when that part of the code is designed to define what's subject to abuse. Under the Drug Control Act, sections 1 through 5, schedules 1 through 5, have been specifically designated as subject to abuse. Title 6 is not, or
Your
Schedule
Honor,
6 is not.
Your Honor, if it pleases the court, my response there would be that the fact that there is not language concerning the potential for abuse given in Schedule 6 does not preclude a particular substance that is abused being placed in Schedule 6. When you look at Schedules 1 through 5, as you go from 1 towards 5, the potential for abuse actually decreases.
Right.
And then Schedule 6, there's no language about abuse. And
right.
So,
isn't that an interesting follow? Number 1 is the greatest, number 2 is less, number 3, number 4, all the way down, number 5, less, number 6... nothing.
And the commonality, Your Honor, for the items, for the substances placed in 6, is they're not as abused as 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. So since they're not as abused as those 5, we're putting them in 6. But it doesn't preclude them from being abused. And my argument is that the Commonwealth had to prove they are abused through evidence given at trial.
Counsel, let me ask you this question, if I could. I don't know if you've got Schedule 6 in front of you, but there are actually three different elements of Schedule 6. And those are different elements than there are in 1 through 5. Is there anything in 6 that indicates whether a drug was subject to abuse or not subject to abuse, whether it would fit within meet those three elements?
Well, Your Honor, I draw your attention to the second one. I believe it is. If I may flip to my brief, just briefly.
It talks about toxicity and potential for harmful effect. But it does not say subject to abuse, does it?
No, it does not. But when you look at, I believe this is number 1, any compound mixture preparation containing any stimulant or depressant drug. And so...
Counsel, let me interrupt you. Just as Goodwin mentioned before, this is a friendly question. In other words, my point is there anything in those three elements that indicates that a Schedule that a substance that's subject to abuse would be either included or not?
I believe there is language that abused drugs
can
be included in Schedule 6, but they're not as abused.
I've had enough for that question. Go ahead, you move on.
I apologize for not knocking that out the park.
Sorry, he's the Madison Bumgarner of our panel.
I must be, yeah.
Thank you. My contention is that there are substances that have been placed in Schedule 6, such as the drug at issue here today, that are abused, but they are not as abused as Schedule 1 through 5, and so they would not necessarily fit within those schedules.
But my point is there are also substances in there that are not subject to abuse, right?
I agree, yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor, there are. It's kind of a catch-all type of category. You kind of work your way down through the drugs the known drugs and known substances, and they're categorizing them. And when you get to Schedule 6, that's just where everything else is placed.
And counsel, this is not a friendly question. our challenge is this, that whenever we're dealing with statutory interpretation, the first thing we always look for is, did the General Assembly define a term? And in this instance, your argument is, well, you can't go to Title 54.1 and the description of Schedule 6 in order to have a conviction under 18.2. Is that fairly?
That's part of my argument. But I also argue that even if you do go there, I still think the court should overrule the Court of Appeals, because I think my argument is that the language in Schedule 6 doesn't preclude a drug from being abused. But yes, that's my initial argument.
It doesn't preclude it from being abused. However, in 18.2247, we are specifically directed to look at 54.1 3400, as those terms are used or defined in the Drug Control Act. They define Schedule 6 as not being subject to abuse, or they define everything else as being subject to abuse, but not Schedule 6. How do you get over that?
Your Honor, I believe that if we get there, if the court wants to jump there, again, I would cite the Rhodes case from 1991 when the Court of Appeals addressed this issue.
No, they didn't. Not they addressed it under a different statute, a different statutory language. That as a response to that statutory language, the General Assembly amended it. When they relied on Rhodes, the statute said, which is not a controlled substance, comma, which is subject to abuse. The General Assembly amended it after that, saying, which is not a controlled substance subject to abuse, and the Court of Appeals thereafter interpreted it, I think correctly, that they changed the meaning of it dramatically, which makes the Rhodes case, I think, inapplicable.
Yes, Your Honor. I would just point to the Rose case, because the phrase subject to abuse was addressed there, and the phrase subject to abuse still exists in the statute as we see it today. And Rose states that we're to use the plain, ordinary dictionary definition for subject to abuse.
Well, here's the dilemma. I mean, aspirin is subject to abuse. Tylenol is subject to abuse. There's all kinds of things that are subject to abuse. Now, how do you deal with that? Well, as Justice Mims said, obviously when you're dealing with Title 54 of the Drug Control Act, the legislature has the opportunity to hear from all kinds of people in the community of drug control, pharmacists, police officers, everybody involved in crafting their statutes. As a result, they craft a statutory scheme that includes five sections they define as subject to abuse and one that isn't. So how do you deal with that, as Justice Mims asked?
That is a good question. Your Honor, I believe if you do jump to the Drug Control Act to define subject to abuse,
as we are required to do,
as your Honors have made that very clear, I believe that that just because there's no language there that indicates abuse does not mean it's abused.
But now, you wanted to say
and by bringing us to that point, you then force us to an absurd result, which is a felony for cornstarch and a misdemeanor for an antipsychotic.
Your Honor, it may seem absurd, I will point this out, that under the argument presented by the Commonwealth, a Schedule 5 drug sold as cocaine, it's classified under Schedule 5 as having a propensity to be abused. That can be sold as a, I see my time's up now.
I think Justice Lacey has a question.
May I finish my comment? Yeah. A Schedule 5 drug purported to be cocaine can be sold, and it's clear to the court that a Schedule 5 drug is subject to abuse because it falls within that schedule. But because it's sold as a Schedule 5, it is not an imitation controlled substance, clearly, under this court's rationale today, and it would be a misdemeanor. 18.2248 clearly says the distribution of a Schedule 5 drug is a misdemeanor, and it can't be an imitation controlled substance, so it couldn't be a felony. So my argument today is Schedule 5, Schedule 6, controlled substances sold cannot be imitation controlled substances.
All right. Has he answered your question?
Your Honor. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Just
I'm fine.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I would like to start by responding to the argument that the Court of Appeals erred by engaging in the statutory construction analysis from the first instance. And specifically, counsel's argument that in light of Rhodes, the language subject to abuse ought to be given its ordinary definition. And I would simply respond, in whereas the case decided after the 1992 amendment, the substance at issue there was not a controlled substance. And so there hasn't been a case that occasioned a court to analyze how do we give effect to both aspects of the phrase, controlled substance and subject to abuse. And that can't be construed in a way that would make subject to abuse redundant. So it was entirely right and appropriate for the Court of Appeals to engage in the statutory construction analysis that it did. It can't construe it in a way that would make subject to abuse meaningless. Counsel argues that merely by being a controlled substance, it is by definition subject to abuse, and as the questions today have pointed out, that runs counter to the scheme enacted in the Drug Control Act. Clearly, the General Assembly has evinced an intent to have a decreasing amount of potential for abuse within the schedules themselves. And to respond to Justice Millett, to your question, I think the absence of that language in Section 6 indicates an absence of concern by the General Assembly for the amount or potential for abuse for those kinds of
things. Well, let me ask you this, though. The definition of Schedule 6 drug has three elements to it, and there are certainly substances that could meet those three definitions, and some of them could be subject to abuse, and some of them could not be subject to abuse.
And I think what's telling within the scheme that's enacted in Schedule 6, and I think to Your Honor's question, I'm assuming you're talking about in the first subsection where we're talking about depressants or stimulants that are specifically exempted from the other schedules.
Yeah, well, it could be. You have to meet all three elements, don't you?
Well, I would assert that in the second part, clearly those items are so toxic. It's the toxicity that renders them in part of Schedule 6, and I would submit that it's unlikely that something that is as toxic as to be included in Schedule 6 would be subject to abuse.
So that means not all things in Schedule 6 are subject to abuse.
Well, I think the larger...
Just being in that category is not going to make a drug subject to abuse.
I think that was certainly the finding of the Court of Appeals, and I think that's the intent of the General Assembly, that by the absence, by the abandonment of that regime for this particular schedule, the General Assembly has concluded that that is not our concern here. These things are not subject to abuse.
But it doesn't answer the question one way or the other, though, does it?
Well, I think its absence from that provision answers the question. But where we have it for every other schedule, the principles of statutory construction in para materia, we should look at the fact that we use this phrase for every other schedule, and it is absent in this schedule. And that is something that means something to the General Assembly.
And so you're saying you couldn't categorically have something that fit one of those three categories and it'd be subject to abuse.
That was the finding of the Court of Appeals, and I think that's right. And I think evidence of the fact that's right is that since this case was decided in the Court of Appeals in November, I believe, of 2013, the General Assembly has met, and they did not amend the statute in light of the Court of Appeals finding. And I think that's a fact of some significance for this Court's analysis. Clearly, we know in 1992, the General Assembly knew very well how to remedy what they concluded was an incorrect interpretation of its intent, and we didn't have that here. And so I would submit the Court of Appeals correctly predicted what the General Assembly intended in enacting this statute. I think the fact that the abuse regime is abandoned for Schedule 6 indicates that's not the concern, and the items that are included in this schedule are not subject to abuse. And so as the Court of Appeals found in its review, the evidence ipso facto proved that it was not a controlled substance subject to abuse when the evidence proved it was within Schedule 6.
See, your dilemma is that you have to rely on a legal definition of substance abuse, subject to abuse, rather than a factual one. Because, I mean, the record doesn't say one way or the other, but I can promise you, having served as a circuit court judge in the city of Richmond, that drug is subject to abuse. That's what a cue ball is called. They crush it up, they combine it with cocaine, crack cocaine, and it is abused regularly. So I don't have any question about whether factually it is subject to abuse. It is. My concern is whether or not the General Assembly, by a Schedule 1 through 6, has defined it in a way that excludes it from being a drug that is subject to abuse for the enforcement of this statute.
And I appreciate Your Honor's perspective, and I appreciate your concern, and I think the greatest evidence of what the General Assembly intended is what it's actually done in this case, and particularly in light of its appellate history, what it did after the Court of Appeals reviewed the matter.
Counsel, are you suggesting that an opinion that came down in November of 2013 would trigger legislation in January of 2014 of this? And I mean, you're saying one session, 2 months, and they've approved it? Is that our test?
Certainly, Your Honor. I would concede that a period of time greater than that would be more persuasive. But I think I would respond that its absence at all is of some moment. I can't quantify that amount for this court.
Maybe a nanosecond. Especially when the case is on appeal to another court.
Certainly this court can use its common sense as to how much time passed and what weight to give it. But I think it is a matter of some amount of significance and should not be ignored. But to Your Honor's question, I think it is clear that the General Assembly abandoned the framework for potential for abuse when it relates to this schedule. And perhaps the General Assembly was not possessed of the same information that Your Honor has through his experience with respect to this particular drug. And perhaps if they were, they would have organized it differently. But I think in light of the law as it's written, and the presumptions that should be given to the intent of the General Assembly in light of the principles of statutory construction, this court is bound to conclude that the Schedule 6 framework is not concerned with abuse and is thus, for the purposes of the code section of an imitation controlled substance, one that is not subject to abuse.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Why wouldn't the statute work just as well the way I've suggested, that it includes substances that are subject to abuse as well as ones that are not? Why wouldn't the statute work just as well?
And Your Honor, my response has to be, because of the conspicuous absence of that language within the schedule and in light of the other schedules and their conspicuous use of it, principles of statutory construction say we must treat that as one body of law, and the fact that the General Assembly saw fit to include it in Schedules 1 through 5 and chose very conspicuously to not include it in Schedule 6 would preclude the inference that it would include both. I think it would have to say something about it in light of the previous use.
Counsel, we're dealing with a criminal statute here, and there's a certain element of that people are supposed to know pretty clearly what's a crime and what's not a crime. So you're asking us to engraft inferences and suggestions and definitions, which obviously there's a debate among the lawyers themselves as to what that means. Why isn't it incumbent on the Commonwealth to produce evidence at trial as to why this is not subject to abuse?
Your Honor, as a...
And so, I mean, isn't that one of the things we have to consider in the fact that it's a criminal statute?
Your Honor, as a threshold matter, I would respectfully disagree with the contention that I'm asking the court to engraft an inference into the evidence that the Commonwealth must present, because this principle of law would require some knowledge of the scheduled drugs of the Drug Control Act, and all we're talking about is the identity of that. So to the extent that any drug is unique and would require reference to find out particularly which schedule it falls in for the purpose of ascertaining the degree to which one may be punished for distributing it or intending to distribute, I would respectfully respond, I don't think that's this particular case is any different than any other Drug Control Act issue. We're simply talking about which schedule does it fall in and what logical inferences flow from that. And I think the Commonwealth did meet its burden in this case by presenting evidence that it was a Scheduled 6 narcotic. And so from that point, I think it's a question of law as to where it falls within the Drug Control Act. It's not, there's no inference necessary to reach that point. The scientific evidence demonstrated the identity of the drug, and it's no different from any other case, whether it's heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine. The Drug Control Act is expansive, it contains the identities of many drugs.
Is it your position that if it were a Schedule 5 drug, it's no doubt that it would be a misdemeanor?
I think that's correct. Because the General Assembly has said that is the case.
Right, and that's the absurd result that Justice Mims was talking about. But that's what the language of the statute requires, doesn't it?
It might require an absurd result in another case, but it doesn't require an absurd result in this case,
I think
would be your answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes.
But you agree that it would be an absurd result that we can avoid by interpreting this statute in a certain way to make, you know, it true in one instance but not another.
I don't think we can properly characterize it as an absurd result where the General Assembly has explicitly stated the result it intends. And so what we would be saying is if it were construed that way, we would be reaching the end that the General Assembly thought was the appropriate end. And so
okay, and that's what I agree with that, 110%. It can't be said it's absurd if the language of the legislature allows it to happen.
Which is not the case if we adopt the defendant's interpretation of what Schedule 6 would apply. I believe that would be an absurd result. And so that's how I would distinguish the two for Your Honor. I'm happy to answer any other questions the court may have. I would ask you to affirm the judgment. Thank you, sir.